Hey, this is Andy Lehr, and you're listening to the Not So Secret Sauce podcast. Welcome to it. This is where we open source the secret sauce. And today I'm being joined by three incredible individuals, starting first with the co-founders of a startup you may never have heard of, but that will change today. The startup is called Carbon Africa, and we have the co-founders of that business. We have Fawaz and we have Femi, and then I've got my incredible colleague at Founders Factory Africa, a part of our venture design team, Amara, joining us on the pod. Welcome, everybody.
Well, thank you for having us.
You're doing well?
Yeah, we
are. Very well.
Excited. So just a few days ago, and we're taping here in Lagos, just a few days ago, in this very boardroom and on that very screen, you were presenting your vision for why Carbon should receive VC backing. Take us back to that, you know, to the pitch. What do you remember feeling, thinking, and how do you think it went? Femi, what do you think?
It was a very interesting experience, you know, having to do your first pitch and trying to get your first check signed. It was at first a bit of a tense experience, but eventually we settled into it and it was great.
But for us, do you remember what, maybe take us to like maybe one slide you presented and you thought, yeah, maybe here we have a chance.
Yeah, when we were.
Which slide was that?
The market validation slide.
The market validation slide. What did you show on that slide? What made you think?
When we were able to prove that we can reduce car dealers' inventory from 12 weeks to 4 weeks.
Okay, so he's letting us into the model and we're going to get into the business itself. Carbon is innovating in the auto tech space and a little more about that in a bit. Amara, you're a venture design proponent here in our team. You're a former founder.
Yes.
Right? Quite notably, the founder of a really big idea that didn't actually pan out for you. Given your role in our team, like, what are the feelings for someone like you as a former founder now, you know, enabling current founders?
I think the excitement for me is there are mistakes that I've learned from. Mm-hmm. And at Founders Factory, working with founders, the plan is, can we get ahead of this risk, mm-hmm. right, for Carbon? And Femi and Fawaz have been top-notch. So seeing them present and then, you know, fingers crossed, standing a chance at getting that investment, you have no idea, right? As a founder, you build in and you know that a yes for funding is literally the only thing standing between you and changing that entire sector.
I know, right?
And that's where they sit now. And that's I tell them, get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
I mean, we're talking, this could be a billion-dollar idea, like quite literally. But we're going to get into it. I'm not going to tease that now. I actually want to get into your story a little bit. You both are college buddies.
Yes, we are. Yep.
So do you remember meeting for the first time? What was the context? Was it class? Was it in the cafeteria at varsity? What was it?
I think I remember a bit of how we first met. He was 2 years my senior.
Oh, right.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So, well, at the time, I was playing with a bit of trying to sell stuff online.
Okay.
I used to sell on OLX, and at some point, I was bestseller on OLX in 2015.
Bestseller?
Yes, I sold over
nationwide.
Yes.
What were you selling?
Phones and laptops. I used to do a lot of stuff in a place called Computer Village.
Uh-huh.
That's like the gadget hub in Lagos here. So I used to sell stuff and all. So the company saw my traction and then they invited me over to their office and the rest is history.
Fun fact, your boy was the voice of OLX for the first several years it existed. So in all the ads and stuff. So.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if they use my voice in West Africa because it's not very West Africa.
Search.
OLX, everything sells. That was me. That was
me.
Well, but yeah. Okay, yeah. But I don't do that any longer. I've got greater things to do now. And what do you remember about Femi that stands out to you?
Interesting journey. We met actually trying to solve a problem for our department.
Which was? What were you studying? You were both studying the same thing?
Yeah, we were in the department.
Different options.
Geology, geoscience. I was studying geology option. He was studying geophysics. So we were on the same WhatsApp platform and we had this disorientation of materials not getting aligned from year 5 to year 1, people keeping different materials. So I reached out to the platform that, can anybody solve this problem? And blah, blah, blah. Uriel reached out to me and that's how we started working on creating a solution. Within 2 days, we finished and created the whole catalog for the department.
Get out of here. What year are we talking right now?
2016.
Yes.
And you've stayed friends ever since.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
We really became close in 2018. After the whole OLX thing, I got an invite from Cars 45 because they saw my traction. They wanted me to.
While at Varsity.
Yes, yes.
So Cars 45, if you're not from Lagos or you've been living under a rock, one of the bigger auto tech success stories in the making, hopefully, ongoing success stories in auto tech in Nigeria and now and across the continent. But yeah, so you get a call from them?
Yeah, I got a text and a call. I was reluctant at first, and eventually I went there. Mm-hmm. And what they were doing at the time was very interesting.
So what? What's the call? So they know you because of what you're doing on OLX.
Yes, the OLX thing was on like 5 Nigerian newspapers, so it was all out there.
They're like, "Who's this kid who's selling all this stuff on OLX?" And you got in the news and stuff, and they were like, "Let's find him."
Yes.
Okay.
So I went there and I saw what he had to offer. So I joined the team, and
before Varsity ends.
Yes.
So you were working like before you left Varsity. Okay.
Yeah, I spent 5 years in university, my course, 5-year course.
Oh, yeah.
So I started selling cars, and I was doing very well with selling cars. Mm-hmm. So I started pulling in my colleagues, my friends, to join the train, and they were also doing well for themselves.
As one of these friends,
for what saw what we were doing, and he liked it because at the time he was also playing with some. He was trying to do printing and stuff, so he does printing on demand when you need to just put together a souvenir or something like that.
Yeah.
So he called me up and said he wanted a meeting, and he wanted to join what we were doing. I said, okay, yeah.
You summoned him.
Yeah.
Your junior, you said. come up and speak to me.
They had money then.
Who were the big boys?
I was making money in school, but their level was not my.
Shut up! this university. Well, what's the university?
University of Lagos.
Yeah, man. Okay, cool. And so, okay, so then you have this meeting and.
We had the meeting and, you know, he joined the group and we started doing stuff. His first time he sold, I think he sold 2 cars in a day.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then,
so you just picked it up like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is how your, I suppose it's important to, it's so useful to reflect on how, you know, your early experiences, relationships, exposure to opportunity, you know, shapes what you end up doing, right? So now you're not just bound by, you know, where you ended up going to school, studying something similar, shared interest in solving a similar problem, one that doesn't actually have the incentive or the promise of profit. I don't think your university paid you for solving that problem, right?
No, it was a free gig.
It was just the departmental problem that everybody was just complaining about, and we just felt...
Fix it. Also, you didn't wait for the computer science people to do it.
No, we did it for ourselves. We pulled together all the resources. We digitized it. And then we put it in a Dropbox. That's a cloud service.
Shucks.
We categorized it according to the years.
Yeah.
So whatever you're looking for, you just do a few clicks and you have it. You can do a download and that's how we went.
This is a sidebar, but how much of what you learned studying geoscience is applicable to the founder experience at all? Let's be honest. No shade to the University of Lagos, you know, rocks and things, right? Or geoscience and, you know, history of the earth and life and stuff, right? Is that geoscience, right?
Maybe it taught us how to uncover new opportunities.
Okay.
I see he's grasping.
Yeah, he's grasping for things.
No. But I mean, is there something to someone listening who's thinking, can I, you know, I'm not studying computer science. I'm not a coder. I'm not studying business or entrepreneurship. You know, I'm studying geoscience. Is there something to, what would you say to someone like that who's thinking, you know, what they're studying isn't exactly what they need?
I don't think what you're studying should stop you from pursuing whatever it is you want to pursue.
Yeah.
The experience of having to go through school itself shapes you in a way that you can pour out whatever it is you have inside you. Like the experience of going through school, having to read your books, make sure you scale through the tests, the exams, and all of that. It prepares you for whatever it is you want to do with your life, because the pitch itself we had a few days back felt more like my Project Defense.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there was...
The Project Defense.
Went well.
Okay, so you're it was a good trajectory. It's a good... It's a good foreshadowing of what we hope might happen here too.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. By the way, Amara, I'm seeing you like itching. If you have any questions, like jump in here.
No,
like, what are you thinking?
No, I mean, I am listening and I'm smiling because it's right. You know, what you study? Let's see, what did I study? I studied a bunch of things, but look at what I'm doing now.
What did you study?
Okay, let's see. Undergrad, I did biology and economics.
Okay.
And for master's, I did business finance.
Wow.
I know.
Pivot.
So see, I know.
See, you're already getting it.
You see? Okay, now you nailed it. That's what it is. It's the pivot.
It's the pivot.
But again, in school, that's the discipline. Like you were saying, the discipline to go through the program, to pass the exams, to keep to the timeline. Mm-hmm. That discipline, as a founder, you need that.
Okay.
So what you study, yes, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
But you see that discipline of seeing something true, staying the course, being resilient.
So, you know, I know formal education gets a bad rap for good reason sometimes. I don't think all institutions of higher learning and structured education in general, especially like mass education, is necessarily keeping up with what the world requires. But I think it's fair to say that there are things you can get out of it and do get out of it and can obviously apply to the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
Talk us through your mindset while being a Cars 45, because you're selling these cars. It's probably more about selling the cars than it is innovating in that space. At which point does it turn into, hey, I'm seeing gaps that maybe we can start to solve. The same way you were at Varsity, you saw a problem you could solve and you start thinking, maybe I could build something to solve here in a way that what I see in the market currently is not. At which point does that kick in?
Okay. While we were still undergrads and we were selling cars, we didn't really notice a problem, because we were not fully in the space. When we transitioned to owning our dealership and started buying cars, selling cars, and being real players in the market, we started seeing the lapses of the problem. And at that time, we were being mentored by then founder of Cars 45, Mo Iyamu. So we kind of picked his brain around some certain problems with this thing, but it wasn't their core focus then. We kept on going, tried until the problem became irresistible not to solve.
Okay, so what was the problem? What were you experiencing? Because we've actually glossed over a few things, right? Yeah. We've glossed over the fact that you finished university, you now, you know, transition from just selling cars to owning a dealership. Maybe let's start there. Like, what goes into that transition, Femi? And then we can come back to the gaps you learned and how what was that transition like?
Okay, so we actually owned dealerships while we were still in school.
Ships, with an S.
In our final year.
Wow.
So we had that running and we were juggling it with, okay, Fawaz was done because it was 2 years ahead, but I was still in school and we were running the dealership. So we were able to experience the pain points firsthand.
Yes, but I'm asking, like, how do you transition from being a Varsity student selling cars to actually running a dealership? That's a little gap.
Okay, I'll tell you a story. Yeah. So we started out as auto brokers with Cars 45, and selling cars over the years, we were able to pull together resources, funds, savings, and all of that. And we put that together to start buying cars. At first, we're buying cars, one car, two cars, and we're keeping them. At some point, we started having significant number of cars that we couldn't just keep anywhere in our compound stuff. So we had to get a physical space. Mm-hmm. And then we kept those cars there. And the inventory kept on growing and it kept on growing. Mm-hmm. So at that point, we started diving deep into daily business operations. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes sales will slow down. We'll have to worry about why is sales slowing down, do some research around how we can get it back up. What are we doing right? What do we need to do more? And all of that. Mm-hmm. So it was at that point that we began to notice the pain points and the gaps in the market.
Fantastic. What were those pain points? What do you remember, like, keeping you up at night and stuff?
Losing customers to cars I do not have in my particular lot. So first of all, there's the headache of trying to get the willing customer to come and buy your car. Mm-hmm. Now the customer arrives and he doesn't like what he's seeing. And he says,
okay, what, it doesn't match the picture they saw online?
No,
what?
It might not match his budget. It might not match the condition, but he has the money. So he goes.
So and you know that money is going to be spent
somewhere else.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So I'm like, it's not like that money's going to be spent.
I'm like, what? And I know few friends that might have that car, but I don't even know the condition, the price and everything. I'm like, how can I spend so much time looking for customers and end up losing it because they don't like this particular car? When, why is there no platform that has all the inventories that I can just say, you don't like this one, I have seven more.
Gotcha.
And that was one, that was the spark.
So Amara, I actually want to bring you in on this one. So thinking back to Kamudi, which was your startup, right? And reflecting on what we're hearing Femi and Fawaz talk about, what resonates in terms of like, you know, yeah, I remember, you know, feeling and sensing the need to solve this problem, and also, you know, the pain points I knew I needed to address, and the steps you took to start to address them.
Kamudi now, well, till it was sold, Jumia Cars. So Kamudi is one of the sister companies under the Jumia umbrella.
Right.
So then I was the managing director for Nigeria and subsequently head for Africa, which had 8 countries in total.
Mm-hmm.
And the one problem, and I worked with Mo, you know, when they were saying Mo, yes, Mo, yeah. Forecast 45s now, AutoCheck, I worked with Mo at Kamudi. And one of the biggest pain point for us is, this was done in 2015, 2016, the inventory over 92% and dealer were for used cars. I mean, Nigeria is a dumping ground for used cars. Everybody knows that.
Right.
And then you have that fraction, which is maybe 3%. That's what you have for, you know, new cars, because people can afford the used cars. But you know what the problem was, is all the car financing back then were for brand new cars, and you had to be working in one of the, you know, big companies for you to access financing.
Yeah, or be an expat.
Absolutely. Because then, you know, credit check and then, you know, financing wasn't, you know, what you will consider to be normal. So for me, that was the first problem. That was a big problem because I had inventory and people can't access it because I'm not giving them financing. So one of the first things that we attacked that was focused for me was, can I help people afford cars? Right? Because we did a little survey and people for the most part had 70% of the money, 80%, 50%. They just wanted that little help.
A little bridge. You just need a little gap there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then in Kamudi, one of our biggest win was building Nigeria first car financing scheme for used cars. It was the first, and we did it then.
Wow.
And we saw a lot of partnerships. And I remember talking to Femi and Fawaz
back
about
then?
It. No, now.
Oh,
while,
okay.
While they're like in Geneva, I remember talking to them about it. Now in Geneva, they're like, no way.
What?
And they're like, you know, oh, OG. I say, no, I dye my hair. I have gray hair. I'm old. I just dye it.
You're not old, Samara. Stop it.
I dye it to cover it, but yeah.
Oh, my word. So you see, this is what I find fascinating. So this parallel sense of, hey, there's a big need. You're obviously experiencing it at a grassroots level or tier, perhaps like a tier or two below the executive lofty heights of Amara was spinning at the time, but you were still entrepreneurial. And I wonder, when you reflect on what you'd consider then a win for the, like in pragmatic terms, right? Because you obviously laid the groundwork for an industry that could innovate further. And so there were definite business wins that came out of that. But then there were also things that didn't work out. Like, what will you reflect on in terms of what worked out pragmatically from a business perspective and what didn't?
What worked out was the car financing.
Okay.
I think we saw a lot of spike in it.
So did that finance play unlock demand as you hoped?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because everything from increase in actual sales,
mm-hmm.
right, to partnerships, you have insurance, you have car fixing companies that we, you know, looked into a partnership, right? And then you saw people actually use the product, right? You saw people that you were solving a real, you know, pain point for.
Mm-hmm.
Like the overall sales and the overall car acquisition and obviously mobility for people
mm-hmm.
was improved. So that, you know, that was a really interesting, really, really good, interesting win.
In a bit, I want you to reflect on what didn't work out as a foundation for our new generation of founders. I'm intentionally using Gen F in this moment, our generation founders to basically build on, right? So we'll come back to that. All right, so let's fast forward to these problems are not being solved. Cars 45, you're looking around, you're telling them, guys, you know, we need to do this. They're obviously not doing it. They have bigger fish to fry. And to be fair to everyone innovating at that time within the space, they probably did. But then the two of you think we could definitely build something to solve the pain point we're experiencing. When did that decision get made? Femi, do you remember?
Yes, I do remember.
And did they know you were making that decision? did they know you were plotting a coup? Oh.
I think the space is more like a synergistic kind of environment. So it's not really a coup. It's more like helping us.
It's not zero sum.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's more like helping ourselves do more business. Mm-hmm. It was last year.
Okay.
Yeah, after we had to deal with a lot of the pain points from the dealer's perspective and also from the broker's perspective. So we were experiencing both sides of the market in terms of pain points.
So 2022?
Yeah, 2022. Okay. So Fawaz, he had more of the vibe to kick this running.
Yeah. You're like, let's do this, man.
We had been discussing it, you know, before that time, but I'm more of an operations person. Oh, okay. Let's keep this going. Let's just keep running our dealership. And he said, no, we have to do this. And he started anyway.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, you know, this is what we had to do, I jumped on it and we started cooking things up.
That actually leads me to the dynamic, so the co-founder dynamic. So you're the entrepreneur, are you the driver? Are you the sort of, do you provide the momentum in your partnership?
I just think about what we need to do. He executes it.
Yeah, he gets
it done.
Yeah, he's an idealist. He comes up with a lot of ideas. He calls me a lot of them. I have something in my head.
And you're like, I'm trying to run things.
Yes. Can wake up 2 a.m. in the night and just start penning things down, and I'll just confirm it and be like, we can do this. This is, but the operations part, I just leave it to him. How he gets run. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. That's probably something you picked up in profiling Carbon Africa as a venture we might actually want to invest in potentially, right, Amara?
Yeah, I always tell them, I think one of the times that we spoke, I said, don't even start building if the two co-founders are not in sync.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
You will raise $1 million and you will know where the idea went.
Yeah, yeah.
But the two of you guys have to, it's a marriage. I think it's even more serious of a marriage than your typical, you know, husband and wife.
You spend
marriage.
So much time together.
Absolutely.
It can't just be vibes. It has to be like a real strong working relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And they had it, and it was one of the things we saw, the compatibility between the two of them. In addition to the problem that they were solving ideally, and this is one of the things that they can be modest, right? But I'm always like, guys, you are aggregating, as it is now, over 500 auto merchants.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge platform.
Yeah. And this is before we unlock the white space.
A lot of this is achieved within the, weeks that they've been in Genève.
Mm-hmm.
The massive growth, right, that we've seen. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, you guys have to, like, you know, make a big T-shirt. Like, because what they're doing, you know, they're very calm.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot to aggregate that number of auto merchants. And that's why they're driving the shelf life.
Yeah.
From, you know, selling it for 12 weeks to pushing it out in 4 weeks.
All right. Now we're into the business. All right. Let's talk. What does this business do? Because now you're talking unit economics. All right. So what does Carbon Africa do? Let's break it down, and then we'll jump back to you, because you're unpacking the why might we invest, right? Case for why might we invest. But what's the big opportunity here? Because let's be clear, we're talking about a $1 billion business in the making here, right? And so what's the big idea?
The big idea is for undergrads to come out of school, start as auto brokers, get the capital we need to start our own dealership without accessing finance, without borrowing money, just from doing our business. If we can do this, and we've replicated it to all our friends around that currently own dealerships around Lagos, now think of the opportunity to have for the younger generation in scale.
Wow.
So that's from the auto broker perspective. And look at a dealer that sinks in hundreds of millions in inventory, and I'm turning his inventory from 12 weeks to 4 weeks. He's doing more business. He's paying more staff. He's happy. He's pumping in money back into the country. He's like, yeah, let's do more business.
Right.
So the opportunity is two-sided.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So we hear the dream over here, because we have Mr. Visionary over here. Operationally, what does this break down to in terms of, you know, a business that actually is working its way to a $1 billion concern?
Okay. So Carbon Africa is a B2B platform that unifies car inventories across dealerships. And then we put all of this information in one space. We give this information to brokers. Those brokers, we nickname them auto merchants. That's what we call them in-house.
Right. And that was you...
Absolutely, I'm dealing, yes.
So you're serving a version of yourself.
Yes, yeah.
We're solving a problem
we had
back then is what we're solving for now.
Yeah.
So it streamlines the entire process for all the participants in the market.
Mm-hmm.
As a dealer, I want to sell faster. Right now, an average dealer in Nigeria only turns over his inventory like 3 times or 4 in a year. Mm-hmm. So which means...
That's what you were talking about, right?
Absolutely.
So it's not just the number of turnarounds you get in a year, it's the speed as
Absolutely.
Well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
The velocity of turnover, mm-hmm. that's the value proposition for the dealers.
Mm-hmm.
An average dealer turns over his inventory like 3 times or 4 times in a year, which means he has his inventory sitting there in his... car stand
or her
for 3 months.
Absolutely. And
shout out to what's her name?
Autogirl.
Shout out to Autogirl. So yeah, it's not just him, it's her.
Yeah.
but I know what you meant. So sometimes that inventory is just sitting there
and they're waiting for the lucky buyer to come.
Okay.
You know? So the aggregation of auto brokers that we have put together, they help to drive the sales to these dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
So you only have to worry about stocking up.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about sales.
Okay.
Cabin helps you to handle that. And for the auto merchants, they have the problem of sourcing the right car at the right price, the right specification for their customers.
Which is what you were talking about earlier when it was like the frustration of watching money walk away.
Literally.
Money you could be, firstly, a need you could be serving. And money that could be flowing into your business. And it's all because of like the mismatch of, you know, the need and the timing, I suppose. Yeah. And I suppose your sense of where you could source the money. Because I imagine you are often in that position where you could source it if you knew where it was, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that problem is being solved too?
Yes, yes.
Which problem are you not solving?
So think of Cabin as a super dealership.
Uh-huh.
So the one-stop shop where you can find everything cars.
Yeah.
So rather than having to journey from one car stand to another before you can make a buying decision because mm-hmm. you are comparing options that mm-hmm. are available to you,
mm-hmm.
there's a platform where you can find everything. You can do the comparison before you even set a foot out there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going in, you know exactly what you're going for. And your options are very clear. In addition to that, the pool of auto merchants that we keep, they bring this personal effect to it. Because on average...
Wait, this is almost like the OLXification of the industry. Because that's kind of what OLX let you do, right?
Yes, in a way,
It made it possible for you to...
Exactly.
To build a business on top of the
platform. It brought visibility to used items that people were no longer... you know, using,
mm-hmm.
and it enabled them to be able to...
Have you ever thought about it like that? Like how that might
yes,
be...
Yes, I think this whole thing is like the culmination of all the experiences
Absolutely.
Across the year. So
yeah.
that the OLX experience shipped things in a way for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. And then, so now reflecting, you want to say something?
No, I was going to say that
yeah.
in a collection of their experience was one of the things that stood out very well for us during the application process, because they're not just founders, but they have, you know, domain experience. They've worked in this space for the past few years. So working and solving problems that they've worked in, like they were auto brokers, auto merchants, and they're solving a problem for themselves. But then again, in the sector that they've, you know, played around in for a while, that they have connections, they have mentors, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, so now maybe let's connect the dots for people who, because we didn't do this up front, right? So you were in this room a few days ago pitching our Founders Factory Africa's investment committee, and the venture design team, Amara and others, Sona, Eunice, Malini, were all in this room having sort of worked with you over how long, Amara?
Roughly 2.5 months now. Call it 3 months. Yeah.
Call
12
it
weeks.
So 3 months doing what exactly? And maybe this is really the prompt, the shameless plug of going, you know, we have this desire to, you know, I suppose it's as much altruistic as it is pragmatically capitalist to find amazing founders with strong concepts and the capacity to, in fact, strong ideas with the capacity to sort of take visions to ventures, right? With the experience and the skill and the know-how of what we can bring to bear, right? So what does that look like practically, and how does it go from the moment, you know, that we start working with them?
So the way the GenF initiative is set up is, once you join, there's essentially, it's a 10 to 12 weeks, you know, initiative, depending on where you come in as a founder and the stage that you are and the concept of the problem that you're trying to solve. So the first bit of it is where we ideate, right? Are we comfortable with the problem you're solving? Are you comfortable with the problem? What does the market look like? Do you understand this problem? And after, at the end of that, what good looks like for us is that a founder understands this and is working away with a functional concept brief that you can plug into the market and execute.
And this is a venture concept. So this is not just an idea. You've translated a great idea into something you can actually start to play out in the market to see if it works. Okay.
Absolutely. And then you move into the next stage, where is market experiments. Because for us, the way the initiative is designed is, you will not get every week 20-page PDFs for you to read. No. It's venture design. So there are customers that want to use the product. We want you to talk to them. We want you to engage them. So then you move into that space where you unlock a budget for you to run market experiments. And one of the things that Femi and Fawaz did for Cabin is they had this focus group where they invited a bunch of auto dealers, a bunch of brokers.
Some of your friends.
Yes.
Some of them? Some people you actually knew?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. All right. Then, you know, understanding, are we building a product that is solving the problem for you? I mean, we're in this space, we understand the problem, but is it solving it for you? Are there problems that we don't know exist? And then connection, and then, you know, updating all of that inventory, if you will. And at the end of that, we take those two, we marry the tractions that they've been able to make to the concept that they had going in, the belief they had going in. We refine that, and then they are pitch ready. So the last bit of the initiative is where you get them ready for IC.
The investment committee,
Absolutely. And they're getting ready to pitch. So for us, we saw Cabin Africa go through that entire journey. Not just us, FFA, everybody in FFA.
Yeah, because this is new for us too. Product. Like this very unique way we're trying to leverage, obviously, the best of what African entrepreneurship can offer through the best founders possible. Back to the slide you were most excited about. Remember you said you were really excited about, there was a slide that really made you feel like we have a chance here to, like, I think we really have a strong investment case for Founders Factory Africa to consider. Remind me what that slide was.
The market validation slide.
Okay. And how much of that was enhanced by this experience? The market validation.
100%.
Okay, so tell me. And he was not prompted, people. He was not. He was not planned. I had a sense that it might be the case, but in what way?
Okay, the market validation just shows that what we think is just not in our head, but what people actually want.
Okay,
absolutely. So it's like we know the problem. We've identified the problem, but we've also gone into the market to validate that if people are willing to pay for our product, if people are really feeling this product, and we've come back with insights, results that shows that yes, and they are willing to pay. So it's like a no-brainer.
Yeah. And what were those results? Because you said something about 500
auto batches, yes. And inventory increase. I mean, Femi.
Yeah. So
I told him, I said, at some point, you're going to have to employ me.
Yeah. You know? You're going to need to put me back in the C-suite. But yeah, what are the numbers, man?
We brought together a bunch of people. We sampled about 30 auto merchants, I think 50.
50, yes.
Yeah, but we spoke particularly.
To be clear, these are friends you've actually, some of them are friends you've brought into this business.
Yes.
Inspired to sort of join, to become auto merchants themselves.
Yes.
Okay, so 30 of them.
Yes, and then we spoke
50,
to the
50.
Yeah, 50. Yeah, we gathered 50
in 2 months.
And delay, we mean business.
Okay, and clearly.
Yeah.
All right.
So we spoke in particular with about 30 of them, and we wanted to know what the challenge is, like hear from the horse's mouth, not just what we think, but what they are really experiencing out there, and that helped us with the market validation, like Fawaz had said. And we also wanted to know if they were willing to pay. And they were very eager to pay, although they had some adjustments that they wanted us to make to the value offering, which we took note of. And that's for the brokers. That's for the auto brokers. For the dealers just want to sell.
Okay. So if you can make a case for how you're going to make, you know, you're going to help me make more revenue, you know, turn over my stock, do that quickly, no problems there.
Good to go, yes.
So at which point does validation look like the actual cash, like hitting the bank account, the actual customers buying? Where in the GenF process do you see that?
Okay, so obviously the businesses that we get are in very different sectors, mm-hmm. right? But the one thing is, if the people that are going to use that product, B2B or B2C, if they leave their daily lives and come for a focus group that you've not created incentive, they're just coming to connect to tell you the problems that they see working in that space and what they want solved. That is our first indication that, yes, mm-hmm. you're connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And then if at the end of it, you're able to collect a wait list from that you obviously continue to mine as the business grows, that is a win. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to think that a business exists. It's one thing to know that, okay, the business, the customers, they're there somewhere mm-hmm. behind a laptop, on the mm-hmm. phone. Mm-hmm. But it is another thing to get them to come to a place that you face, to connect with you mm-hmm. and to tell you what they rather see you build, if that's not what you're building, or to tell you how they're experiencing the pain points in the space. So that validation period for us, that market experiment period, is very key mm-hmm. in the GenF initiative, because for us, that is where we understand that, yes, what you have going in, somebody wants it and you validated it, and then we have something we can refine mm-hmm. with actual traction that we can put actual milestones on mm-hmm. traction, actual milestones that we can put in front of the, you know, investment committee.
Fantastic. So you're both making a case for the need for VC backing, which is a very specific kind of money and that's chasing a very specific kind of hyperscale, hypergrowth potential, right? Make the case for that. Like, what? How is this a $1 billion idea, and how quickly? Because I imagine there are ways to sort of be in the auto vehicle business that don't lean into that thinking. I'm going to build something fast and scalable and big. And that warrants like the kind of VC that we would invest at Founders Factory Africa. So what goes into that idea? And the reason I'm asking is because I want you to speak to people who we want to make the admission that not everybody is a tech entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah.
Building a VC backable business. Not everybody is. And that's okay, right?
Yep.
And some people are SME people, are going to transition into some form of big business, but that doesn't warrant, you know, VC backing in this way. What would you say qualifies this as a VC backable business?
We are in an industry that was shaped by VC funds. We have AutoCheck, Cars 45. So our predecessors grew the rapid scale and captured the market via VC funds. We are also tackling an even bigger problem. And to grow to that scale, to be able to compete and become market leaders, we also need VC funds. Mm. And secondly, we've been running this business, for this thing, without VC funds for about a year. And we've been able to break even in operations. Not so many entrepreneurs can say that. Imagine what we will do when we have VC funds.
Mic drop. Don't drop this mic. The team's not going to be happy with you. But, I mean, did he leave anything out?
Addition to what he has said, when you look at the scale of the market, the African used car market sits at about $4.5 billion. And Nigeria alone accounts for about $1.5 billion of that.
A few cars here in Nigeria.
Cars, yes.
It's just a few.
That's why you're stuck in traffic.
It's just a few. Not a lot.
Like Amara said earlier, over 90% of those cars are used cars.
Yeah.
Only a very small, tiny percentage are brand new cars.
I'm from Zimbabwe. I totally get this. Like, we bring in those Japanese vehicles. Yeah, we're bringing those things in, man. So I get the whole vibe. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you look at the number of dealerships we have in Lagos and outside of Lagos, mm-hmm. over 700 of them, mm-hmm. and the pool of auto merchants that are currently untapped, over 30,000 of them, mm-hmm. putting the number realistically, mm-hmm. and to think of it that the market is disjointed.
Yeah.
There is no player that is currently unifying and galvanizing the entire market. Cabin is trying to do that. And for us to get to that scale where we can do all of these things mm-hmm. and bring every player on board, we need some sort of backing.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we got into founders factory.
Listen, is it that sweet? Is it a sweet spot, Andela?
It is a sweet spot, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, we say on the show that we open source the secret source. So this is what's happening here. It's really important that we don't miss out on the opportunity to really just distill and demystify really what goes into, you know, a success story in the making, like what we're seeing here. And we're winding down now. And I'm coming back to something I promised I would come back to, Amara, uh-huh. which is asking you to reflect on things that haven't gone quite as well as you hoped in your entrepreneurial or founder journey. And so what would you reflect on in terms of like things that you in your entrepreneurial journey tried and failed at doing but have since sort of been able to sort of pour into newer versions of success, perhaps even vicariously through founders like them?
I think the first bit of it, I think I mentioned, and they already got it. If you're not in sync with your co-founder, mm-hmm. you might as well stop.
Mm.
There's no amount of VC money, innovation, pivots. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
That is the first thing. And the second thing, building in Nigeria is different,
mm-hmm.
right? There's building outside, there's building in Africa, then there's building in Nigeria.
In Nigeria.
And it's
Africa
own,
deep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's his own unique self.
Yeah.
So you have to, this is you juggling your average Nigerian uniqueness, but then you're also juggling the economy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You're juggling the government, you're juggling policies that might come out that you don't anticipate. So what this means is staying agile enough to react when this happens.
Yeah.
I think that in the past, a lot of this from the founder to staying agile, all of it, you know, were top and key at some of the failures that I have. And I promise you, Andile, we will still do that. Do that whole podcast and then I'll tell you all of it. But I think
we've been asking Amara to share her story since she joined our team. Like, she's got such a fascinating founder journey experience that we'd love to share. In your time, Amara, no pressure.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. Guys, co-founders, you guys have to be in sync. I think that's the first of it. The second of it, you have to stay agile enough to pivot, mm-hmm. right? To respond to the spaces. Once it's changing, you changing with it. But then at the same time, staying at the pulse of the people that you're providing for. Once you lose that touch with either the merchants or the dealers, you've lost it.
Yeah.
Consistently. Because, and that is one of the things we focused as well when they were in Geneva. You need to connect with them so much that, you know, fall in love with the problem. I forgot. I think it's Andy's line. He loves
yeah.
it. Fall in love with the problem and the solution will follow.
Yeah.
So for me, that's it. I think Andila, if they get that, I mean, I don't think they're about to go and buy Mercedes. Would they get the funding? They're not going to
They might buy one. And share it. No, honestly.
I don't think they're about to be that extravagant. They're not. They're like really level-headed.
Yeah. And I mean, they've had the unfair advantage of living through the problem and having it. And so being organically close to the problem. And then it's interesting because you're right how intentional you have to do to be to stay close to the problem. So the research component, like polling your colleagues, because there's also something to be said for thinking, I've been through this, I get it. You know, but things are changing. You don't quite get it the same way you did when you were at varsity. Things are different. You know what I mean? And there has to be an intentionality to staying in touch with your customer and making sure you're building for them.
To add, I fell in love with the problem that I went ahead to get another degree just to understand the scale of the problem.
Yep.
I went to get the master's degree in transportation management and planning.
Oh, stop it. That's amazing. And I think so many gems have been dropped. There's nothing more to be said except to say thank you to all three of you. We've been wrapped. Our producer's wrapping us. Yeah. And I wish we could go on. But this story continues. We genuinely, Amara, confirm, we genuinely wish you well. We are very hopeful. Amara, you were here for the pitch. It apparently went great.
Yep.
We do have a very serious and very focused investment committee. And we do hope that they see the value you've shared on this podcast. One way or another, I'm betting, it's a win either way. And so a big thank you to the co-founding team of Cobb in Africa, Fawaz and Femi, and a big thank you to my colleague Amara.
Thank you for having us on your podcast.
Absolutely. And shout out to everyone listening right now. This has been the Not So Secret Source podcast. I'm Andy Le. Cheers.